everyone. We have a really great episode for you today. Surprise, we're back. We didn't even take a break.
Breaks are for losers. Not us.
Breaks are actually for winners. Breaks are for people that deserve them, and apparently we don't. But we're back, and we have an amazing episode. A bucket list, one might say.
We manifested this.
We absolutely did, right here on this podcast.
In this very space, we said, watch our dreams come true.
Watch our dreams come true. And if you're listening, this is T2NF, an F1 podcast with Kate and Nicole. My name is Kate.
I'm Nicole.
And this is our show. This is our podcast. We're your hosts. And today is a great day to be us.
One for the history books.
And we're gonna. And let's get into it. Thank you so much for making time to chat with us.
No, thanks for having me.
Of course.
We're so excited.
This is something that we've been wanting to do for a really long time. So thank you so much.
When your book first came out a couple of months ago, we were like, man, we would love to have Gunther on the podcast to talk about his book. So I'm glad that it finally it came true. Look at that. So it's really fun to be able to, you know, talk about your book with you and kind of dive a little deeper into the life of Gunther Steiner.
Perfect. I'm ready. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you, girls.
Nice to meet you. So, Gunther, first of all, we loved your book. And I think my favorite part was that you did the audiobook. That was like everyone we talked to said, I want this audiobook, but I only want an audiobook if it's Gunther reading it. And then you did. And so everyone was psyched about it. But I thought the book was so interesting. And I really loved that you kind of structured it as a series of journal entries. I thought that was a really fun way to give readers really like a glimpse behind the curtain. Was that something that you planned or were you just, you know, writing journal entries because you knew you were going to write a book, or kind of how did it happen that that was the structure of the book?
Very strange how the book in the first place happened, because I didn't plan to do a book. So I was approached to do a book, and first of all, I ignored the emails because I said no real interest to write a book, you know, or to do a book, because I wrote it with somebody, obviously. And then at some stage, the guy was persisting, you know, and he said, "Oh, speak with this." He wrote the book with Johnny Herbert as well, which was a former F1 driver. And Johnny's a friend, and said, "Speak with Johnny about me." I spoke with Johnny, and he said, "No, the guy's a good guy. You know, you'll have fun with him." And then I said, "Okay, let's speak with him." And I talked with him, and I said, "I don't want to do autobiography because, I mean, everybody has done one, and it's a little bit nerdy, you know." I said, if we do something, we have to come up with something a little bit different, a new approach to what is done. And he said, "How about if we do like a diary, and a diary of races, you know, and what you do?" And I was like, "Well, that could be interesting, and it's a different way to do it." Obviously, it came out a different way. And I said, "If we do it, it needs to be that even if somebody's not a big F1 fan, he still reads it because it's entertaining." You know, that was one of the things. I didn't want just F1 fans reading about which setup we put on the car and mm-hmm. which wing level we run, you know, because that gets old pretty quick, you know. So he said, no, we do this, that. And obviously, the only risk was, I said, if it is a boring year, what are you going to write about? And he said, it will not be boring. I said, well, maybe you know something I don't know, but he was right, you know, credit to him, you know. And then we started to write it, and after each race, we had a briefing, you know, I told him what happened, and we wrote it, you know. And like the stories, you know, of my past, the good old day stories, you know, which you young people are not really interested in, the good old day stories, they came out. I took the guy with me to a few races, and I just told him the stories over dinner. I cannot sit down and you ask me, tell me a good story of your life. I cannot come up with one. But when you're at dinner, you know, so one thing leads to another, and then you tell these stories, you know. And he said, these are great stories for the book. I said, if you think so. And then obviously we did a little bit of background work, do the details, so you get the real story. And that is how this book happened, you know. So that is how this diary came together.
I love that. Yeah, that's so fun. And I'll correct you in that I loved the stories from the good old days. I thought those were some of the most interesting parts because, like you said, we're watching the races every week, and so it was great to hear, you know, about your mindset during those. But I loved hearing about things that, you know, I, you know, wasn't a fan of F1 during that time, or I wasn't alive yet, and so it was really fun to kind of go back and hear about.
I don't think
that.
You were alive.
Maybe the very early days.
Yeah.
Now, did you always keep a journal, or is this something new that you started doing just for the book?
Something new, completely new, and actually, I just made a few bullet points, and then I always said when we wrote it, I need to speak the week after the race, what happened, or if something happens, that it's fresh in my mind. I'm not good in remembering things, because I always think it is not interesting, you know, because next week will be another drama, you know, or something else new happening, you know. So it's always, so I have to get it off my chest immediately. Mm-hmm. So it's not forgotten. I would have to tape it, but I worked together very well with the writer. So we became friends doing it. So it was very easy to do, to be honest.
Is there anything from the first draft of the book that got cut from the final edition that you wish had made it in, or did everything make it through to the final cut?
No, everything made it through. There is nothing which is missing, because in the end we wanted to tell the real story, how it happened, you know. So everything, there was obviously for some people maybe some things that they don't appreciate, but it is reality. That is what happened, you know. There is no fantasy work and nothing left out.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So I want to dive a little into some things that you talked about in the book. And the first is, I would love to hear more from you about kind of the first iteration of what would eventually become Haas that didn't end up happening. It must have been really disappointing at first to have put in so much work to create this American F1 team and then have it, you know, really working to get over the finish line and watch it not come to fruition. I think a lot of people can relate to that. What, like, really kept you motivated to keep working and eventually bring Haas to life into the F1 grid?
I think if you've got, I would say, a target, a dream, you just keep on working. And I'm always in the opinion, you try to do always your best. You know, you put the best effort in. Sometimes your best effort is not good enough. But as long as I can say every morning, I always, or every evening, I put the best effort into the day I can do, that is the limit. And sometimes you're at the wrong place at the wrong time, and sometimes you're at the right place at the right time. You know, it's a little bit of fortune as well in life, but you put this effort in, if it works, fine. But I was also under no pressure. If it didn't happen, maybe my life would have changed, obviously, because it would have changed. But I was okay, you know. I have my own company, and this was just a thing which I thought it was a great idea at the time, you know, to try to do something. And obviously, Mr. Haas must have thought the same, because in the end, he put the effort in, which is bigger than mine, put the money behind it to make it happen, you know. So, but I think it's not difficult for me to keep on being motivated, because you say you do your best and something will come, you know. So it's just like always keeping on pushing hard.
Yeah. Do you still have the PowerPoint that you made for Gene?
I'm sure I've got it somewhere on one of my old computers, and I'm sure I've got, you know, at the time when you went to a presentation, you have a PowerPoint, but you always had to have a printed copy as well, you know.
Yeah.
So even if you speak only 12 years ago, that what it was, you always had to have hand over a printed version. These days you don't do that anymore, you just send the file. But at the time, I'm sure at home I've got some of these ones as well. And it's actually quite a good question, because I need to go and check, because it would be nice to go through it and see, yeah.
Yeah.
What was the plan? It happened at the end, you know.
I was going to say, I feel like that's like a fun kind of thing to look back on and say, okay, what, you know, what changed from this first iteration that we had, and how have we grown beyond kind of our wildest dreams? And, you know, we're big nostalgic people over here. So you should definitely look for that and see if you can find it and just revisit that.
I'm sure I'll find it, Nicole.
So one of my favorite parts of the book was when you were talking about your rally days, and you went to the Dakar rally and got lost in the desert and was stuck in a van with five other stinky men, and were really, you said that the only thing you had was a compass to try and find your way, and it was one of the most interesting parts of the book. But it made me think, have you ever seen the show The Amazing Race?
No, I've not seen it.
It's essentially a show where you team up with a friend or a person in your life, and it's essentially that. You have a compass, and you get a little bit of money, and you have to make it to, you get clues, and you have to basically race all over the world to find things, and you can barter with people, and that's how you kind of get around. And it sounded just like your experience. And my question is, if you could choose one person from the F1 world to team up with for the Amazing Race or to redo your Dakar rally, who would you choose?
I mean, if I could, like Mattia Binotto, you know, I mean, he's not in Formula One right now, but he was there, and hopefully he will come back. But I would go with him because at least we could, I know that I could enjoy it and laugh about it. The only difference, what you are saying, this race with my one in Dakar, I didn't plan to get lost, you know. I planned to race. There was no plan to get lost and just have a compass, you know.
Yeah, this one would be
I don't think a lot of people ever plan to really get lost, but I was reading that passage in that story and I was like, well, I know he obviously comes out of it, but I'm very excited to see like where the next twist and turn of this story is going to be. I agree with Kate, it was one of my favorite parts of the whole book. And one of the other things you talk about in the book is when you went to go see Rush and you really enjoyed it, and you were talking to Nikki about, you know, the actor that portrayed him, and you know, you were commenting on how well of a job he did. And so I would just be curious if you've ever thought about who would cast in the role of in the Gunther Steiner story, who would you want to portray you?
Clint Eastwood, the coolest guy in the world. I know he's a little bit old now, I mean, you know, but you know, for me, you know, for my generation, I mean, Steve McQueen is gone already, you know, so he's not around, but this would be cool people. Maybe you girls don't even know that anymore, this elderly cool people, you know?
I mean, I think we're pretty up to date on things. I think you're not giving us enough credit about
what... I underestimate you, yeah.
We may even be older than you think we are, so...
and I also would be curious, like, what would be the regimen for you training this actor on how to like confidently portray you in the film? What would one day in your life look like that they could really understand who you are?
I would just take them with me the whole day. I mean, I would be like Nikki saying, take him with me 3 days and then tell, I mean, he's just good because he was with me 3 days, you know? I learned from the best, you know? So I learned from the best, you know? How confidently he told me, yeah, I mean, sure, he's good. He was with me I trained him for 2 days. All right, then, you know?
I mean, it is what it is.
You have to be confident. Confidence is key in knowing that you did that. Another thing that you mentioned is during the U.S. Grand Prix in Austin, you said they had Ed Sheeran and some other musicians there, but you wished that it was ABBA who was playing. And my question there is, have you seen the Mamma Mia movies, and which one is your favorite?
I have seen years ago one of them, yeah, and I actually wanted to go to the musical in London a few months ago when I was there, but I didn't make it, you know. I went to see Tina Turner instead, you know, the musical, not her, the musical, you know, so it was good, you know. So, but no, I've seen one, but it was the older one, the ABBA movie. I don't know how many there are, therefore I couldn't say, I think it was the first ABBA movie I've seen, you know. I don't know, is there more than two,
Nope, there's just two. There's Mamma Mia.
Then
one.
I saw the old one, you know.
Yep.
So then I saw the old one. I know that there's more than one, but I've seen that one. But I still would like to see the musical, which is all 3D images and stuff like this. It's apparently it's pretty cool.
Yeah, you got to see the second one. It's a very hot button topic, which people think the first movie or the second movie is better, and like which collection of songs is better. I am a fan of the first one, but I think that some people find that to be a controversial take.
Okay, I will check out. Next time I have the chance, I go and watch it.
What is your favorite ABBA song?
Tell me a few. I don't remember the titles.
We've got Lay All Your Love on Me.
Yeah, we've got Mamma Mia.
We've got Gimme, Gimme, Gimme. We've got Money, Money, Money.
I like that one. Money, Money, Money. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that fits your personality super well, so I agree with that. In the book, you bring up the idea of a white collar boxing match between the team principals. Now, this is something Kate and I have talked about on our podcast as well. We discussed potentially Toto versus Zach. And while Zach's not technically a team principal, we did discuss it. But who would be your ideal title fight among the team principals?
Toto.
Versus you? Yeah. Or who else? You
I thought the question was who would I fight?
Oh, no. Both? Okay, no. So we'll do both. So you're fighting Toto, but then also, like, who else do you want to watch?
Christian and Zach.
That would be good.
Okay,
that would be fun, yeah. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Who would win?
And who's winning?
It would be a close match, yeah. What you? Yeah, I think it would be a close match, you know? I don't know.
Like we said in when we were talking about Toto and Zach, we were like, okay, well, Toto definitely has the height, but we think we could underestimate Zach and his ability to be quick. So, you know, I think it would be pretty evenly matched, but I think Toto ultimately is going to come out on top. We've seen too many videos of him working out to not know how strong he is.
Correct. You know, I think he wins, and we know how much Zach works out. Basically, yeah. Nothing. You know.
Something that, like, you mentioned once in the book, and it was the only time you mentioned it, and I wish you mentioned it more, and I have to know more. You talk about, at one point, you said, I gotta go put on my lucky shorts and go to the racetrack. What are your lucky shorts? Do you wear them for every race? I have to know more about this good luck ritual.
No, it's more of a saying, you know, I don't have any luck in shorts, really. You know, it's more of a saying, I need to do something to get some luck, you know.
Got it.
Because otherwise you think I don't change them, you know, I wear them the whole weekend.
That's not a rumor.
Every photo
we'll
see.
Promise.
Yeah, exactly. That is not what the rumor we want to spread here on this.
The headline is just Gunther owns one pair of
stinks.
Shorts.
That's it. No, stinks. And we know why now.
Problem solved. In the book, you talk a lot about the upcoming Vegas Grand Prix, and you seem very, very excited about it, right? Which we're also super excited to see how this pans out too. There's a lot of buzz around it. We went to Miami last year for the first race, and you know there was a lot of buzz around that race, so we're excited to see it amped up to like a million for Vegas. But you mentioned that as of last year, you actually didn't know where you were going to be able to stay because of all of the rooms being booked up. Have you and the team finally found yourself a room to stay in for the Vegas Grand Prix?
Yeah, we found the whole team is staying at the MGM Hotel, you know.
Fine.
So we found something, yeah. I think the problem with the team there is some of the guys have not been in Vegas, so I think we need to keep a close eye on them,
yeah.
so we're not losing them, you know. So who has not been there? It's a different world. And when you tell this to people, like our people, they travel all over the world, you know, so they have seen a lot of things. But if you have not been in Vegas, it is one of these things. You know, there's only one of it. And yes. There is a reason why, you know, you cannot compare it with anything else. And especially now having a complete night race, I find that is pretty cool. You know, starting at 10 o'clock at night, the race is on a Saturday, is cool, you know. So, as I said, we need to make sure that the guys after the race go back where they should go, is to their room and not around, because Vegas starts at 2 in the morning, you know, never sleeps, you know. So
you're going to have to enact a curfew.
And yeah. I've stayed at the MGM before. It's a good hotel, so I think you'll like it. It's a good one. Very fun. There's a great buffet.
Yeah, it's
no
fun for us. We are just there for work, Kate.
Oh,
you
yeah,
know?
You're right. Yeah,
fun for us, exactly.
Zero
yeah.
fun. Zero fun. There's nothing good
work.
There. Tell your team. There's nothing fun.
There's nothing fun to do there.
No.
Just
Vegas
come in, go back.
You just want to go to sleep. That's it. That's
notoriously known for being boring, for sure.
Yeah. So you've obviously worked in rally and in NASCAR and in Formula One. Is there any other motorsport series that you would like to give the Gunther treatment?
I mean, you know, it's not that I want to do something different, but I find MotoGP quite interesting. I never worked with bikes, so it would be something completely new for me. And I don't know if I, because my experience is all with cars, but that would be one of the things I would be interested at least to learn about, you know, MotoGP, because I think these guys are very cool, you know, and very brave, in my opinion.
Yeah,
and therefore, I quite like it.
That's my goal too. I really want to get more into MotoGP. So Gunther, you and I can go on a MotoGP journey and we can learn about MotoGP together.
Absolutely. And I'm trying since 2-3 years to go to a race, but I never find the time to go to one because, you know, with our schedule, it's very difficult. Exactly. Yeah. And then when we are in a place, they're the complete opposite side of the world, you know, so it's always difficult. So, but I hope I can get there. I think this year I cannot do it anymore, but next year I need to plan to go to one.
Well, you let me know which one you're going to, and I'll be there too, and we'll watch.
We go together. Yeah.
Okay, we have a couple of just like quick, rapid fire questions. Who would you say is the biggest diva in the paddock?
That's very personal, though. The biggest diva, I think, Lewis. Huh?
Lewis.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's fair.
I can see that.
Quite anonymous here, you know.
Presumably.
I think he deserves to be a diva too. He's earned it at this point. What is one of the craziest rumors that you've heard about yourself?
I mean, the latest one, which is I'm suing Gene in the moment, you know. So that is quite a crazy bit. When I read it, it's like, yeah, I don't know about that one, but it's completely out of nowhere. Yes, I'm not going to sue Gene.
Too much on the line. Can't be suing Gene.
Maybe the wrong moment, huh?
And who would you say has been your favorite driver to work with in terms of personality?
Think of personality. Kevin is pretty good to work with, to be honest, you know. And I know him a long time. That maybe helps as well. We know each other very well, you know. It's like we don't even need to talk. We just look at each other and we know what we think, you know. So that is good to work
with. A true sign of best friends. I love that. You cannot just communicate with a look.
Yeah. And he knows when to get away from me, you know.
Yeah.
Probably a good trick to have up your sleeve. So last of these more quick questions, but I don't know if you've heard, but Toto is now doing some guest lecturing at Harvard Business School. What is a topic that you think that you could teach a course on at Harvard?
About how to speak with people direct. To say what you want to say without wasting time.
I think that's something that people could learn. Yeah, that's good.
When was this a skill set that you kind of picked up? Has it been over the course of your career, or is it something that you felt that you had to like seek out and learn on your own because it was just other people weren't doing it around you?
No, I was always pretty outspoken about things. Obviously, it depends also on the circumstances you work in, if you can use it or not. But then when I worked with Niki Lauda, obviously there, he was the master in it to say a lot in as little as possible, you know. So and that reinforced my way of doing things as well. And from there onwards, I said, I mean, either I'm myself or I do something different.
And one more question before we move on, but in the book you talk about kind of the role social media has played in, you know, in your life through Drive to Survive and the Haas team kind of promoting you. Do you think you've kind of grown comfortable with your role on social media and kind of becoming a meme sometimes, or is it still something that you find uncomfortable?
No, I'm fine with it because I think, you know, and I'm not present on social media, me as a person, and I don't follow a lot, but obviously I've got a 14-year-old daughter which shows me sometimes the memes and stuff, but I think they're all done in the right perspective, you know, to have fun, to entertain people. So I don't get upset because I sometimes say things you shouldn't be saying, and if you do it to people, you need to, if you dish it out, you need to be able to take it as well, you know. So I'm always living with that principle, you know. So if nobody's getting nasty against me or against my family, I'm pretty, I can smile at myself. I can laugh at myself a lot, you know.
That's a really good quality to have. One of the things, you know, like we mentioned earlier, we talked about how earlier on this podcast, we have talked about how we wanted you on to be able to talk about this book. And, you know, we often credit you on the pod for being an inspiration to the two of us due to the fact that you aren't afraid to make things happen for yourself. We love kind of the career journey you've been on and how you have set out to find success in your own right and on your own path. So what is some advice you can give us about building a successful and fulfilling career?
Just first of all, try to do what you like, make it possible. Because if you do something and you like it, you always do your best. And sometimes the best is not good enough, and we have to live with that, you know. But at least you know for yourself, I've done the best I can. I never, it isn't down that I didn't succeed because I didn't put effort in, put 100% effort in. And then I always saw you will have success in what way or another, you will have success, but and never give up. I mean, that is a thing you shouldn't do. It didn't work out today, I'm not going to do it anymore, you know. No, keep on doing it again. It's the same when I went out creating this F1 team. Gene Haas was not the first guy I approached. I approached a lot of people, and it's just like, okay, I respect people. They passed on a project I want to do, but I still respect them, and you keep on going, you know. And that's the thing, and you girls are young, and you've got a brilliant future in front of you, you know. If you keep on working hard and trying hard and have the confidence that you do the right thing because you put the right effort in, because that gives you confidence, in my opinion, you will have success. As simple as this. Yeah. It's pretty simple. You know?
It is, yeah.
Head down and keep on going for it, yeah.
Well, another thing that we talk about on this podcast is that we are huge fans of Haas, and we want to see Haas have all the success that you all deserve. We love the kind of family vibe that the whole team has, and you all seem so close. And so one thing that, you know, you talked about a lot in the book and we are always thinking about is, what is the best sponsor for Haas? You know, who does Haas need to work with? And we would like to take some time to pitch you on some of our best ideas for who Haas should partner with.
So first of all, we've got one common interest. I want to see Haas successful as well, you see? MoneyGram is a very good title sponsor. MoneyGram, as a company, we like it a lot because they work hard for us. So in the end, we have got a good sponsor with us. But we can use any sponsor. You know, it always helps. Money always helps, as you know.
We always joke that we're going to be cold calling a bunch of these companies to be able to say, hey, you got to give Haas some money because we think you would be a great partner for them.
So here's our quick business pitch, because as you said, we have to go out and take it for ourselves what we want to do. So we have put together a pitch deck for you. And we believe that Haas has unlimited potential as the only American Formula One team, and you have fan favorite figureheads as yourself. You've had previous out of the box partnerships, like the partnership you did with Chipotle. And we think that you have the ability to work with some really creative partners with American brands that will get positive media attention, get support from new fans and old fans, and most importantly, make some fucking money.
Right, comes their way. Perfect. Fantastic, Kate. Well said.
So the first brand that we like is Oscar Mayer Wiener. And we think this is a really, what is more American than a hot dog? Nothing. And what is more American in the F1 world than Haas? Nothing. This would have everyone rooting for the home team. We have a fun livery that you could do as a special introduction here, where it makes the car look like a hot dog. The drivers could wear a suit that looks like the ketchup and the mustard on the hot dog.
Built over it, yeah.
And we Perfect. can brand it the Oscar Mayer Wiener. It works.
Let's see what Oscar Mayer says to it, you know.
The next is Haas Avocado, of course, because Haas and Haas, same word, different spelling. And this would bring brand recognition to a whole new level and would be just as perfect as when you slice into an avocado and it's perfect on both sides. Once again, a fun announcement livery where the driver's helmet looks like the pit of the avocado.
Good idea. Yeah.
Thank you.
You girls did your homework, you know?
Oh, we did. We've been thinking about this for a long time. The third is Chubbies. I'm not sure if you've heard of this brand, but they're a very fun men's fashion brand in the U.S. They very much feel aligned with Nico's personality. He loves a fun print. And they, you know, they do short shorts for men, swim trunks, regular shorts, fun party shirts, and have really fun patterns. And we think that neither Haas nor Chubbies lack any personality, and it would be a great opportunity to bring them together, really eye-catching designs both on and off the track, and we thought it would be very funny to also have a race suit that makes it look like the drivers are wearing the shorts.
Shorts, yeah. It's actually quite a good idea, you know.
Thank you. And then last but not least, we would be remiss if we did not put this in here, but Two Girls, One Formula. If we had any money, we would give Haas every cent, every last dollar that we have as your sponsor, and we could name it Two Girls, One Haas.
That would be even better. So, what is stopping you making money?
Well, we're still in the early stages of our business development. So we're, the things that's stopping us right now is we're trying to get sponsors just like you. We're struggling to get sponsors for the podcast.
It's always a struggle. But keep on pushing. As I said before, you will find them, you know?
You know?
You will find them.
So if you like our ideas, if you feel passionate about our ideas, that gives us confidence that our ideas are good, and then we can go out and really pitch these ideas to other brands to invest their money in our podcast. And then in turn, we'll make so much money that we can then return the favor to you and invest in the Haas team.
And then we all work together.
Exactly. Like, and then we can also go out and do MotoGP too. We can make a conglomerate. Yeah. But on those lines, if we're going to be confident, and we would love to work with you and with Haas in some way or shape and form, Nicole and I will actually be in Monza in a couple weeks for the Grand Prix. And we would love to work with Haas on promoting your book and promoting Haas and telling all of our fans that Haas is the number one team on the grid.
Very good. You know, and why did you pick Monza?
We wanted to go to an international race, and I'll let Nicole tell the sob story here.
Actually, it's funny. We're reclaiming Monza because I was with my ex-boyfriend who got me into Formula One, and I thought he was going to propose to me when we went to Italy and for the Monza Grand Prix, but I unfortunately caught him cheating on me, and so the Monza Grand Prix was a little ruined for me, and I didn't really want to watch F1 after that, but Kate convinced me to come back, and we created Two Girls, One Formula out of lemons, and so it is kind of a full circle moment for us where I'm going back, and I'm having a much better experience this time around.
Sounds good, you know. If you're around, come and see us, you know.
So,
I would love to.
All right. Well, Gunther,
thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. This was so much fun and like a dream come true for us on this podcast. Appreciate you coming on and bringing your great energy and being willing to chat with us and answer some of our crazier questions. This has been amazing.
Well, thank you for having me, and it was fun also for me. As you know, I mean, I always enjoy things, you know, new things, and if it was good for you, no, appreciate it.
You know, if there's one thing we learned from your book, you do love to talk, so we are very excited to have you on the pod to be able to give us your side of the story a little bit more. So thank you so much, and hopefully we'll see you in Monza.
Monza, yeah, hopefully see you in Monza. Come by, girls.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gunther.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Nicole.
Now, if there's one thing these two girls are going to do, it's make their dreams a reality, which, like I said, with Gunther, that's why he's our ultimate girl boss, because
he makes
things happen for himself, and so do we.
That was, I think, maybe one of my favorite interviews we've ever done. Like, and it makes me so happy because he just is who you think he is.
Yeah.
You know?
It's WYSIWYG with Gunther, you know?
I loved him. And that was so much fun. Like, my cheeks hurt because I was smiling so much and laughing, and like, I'm still smiling. And like, I can't believe that just a couple months ago we said, I wish that we could have Gunther on the podcast to talk about his new book, A Fireside Chat with Gunther. And look, look at this episode. This episode's called Two Girls, One Gunther Steiner. We did it.
And soon it will be Two Girls, One Haas.
Yes.
Because we will be business partners together.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then me and Gunther are going in on we're going to buy a MotoGP team.
I think it's going to be perfect. It's literally no notes. I think we really crushed it. We crushed our manifestations, and, you know, it's just funny to me that even from the beginning of like Two Girls inception, and like even watching from the first episode of Drive to Survive, we've always been like, we love Gunther, and we're so happy that someone like this has found success in the Formula One world. Like, you know, for all intents and purposes, like, obviously in the book, Gunther talks a little bit about how he didn't finish school and he kind of dropped out, and then he just started working really hard and making a name for himself. And I find that so admirable. And I just love his energy. And I love the fact that he is not afraid to take risks and really put himself out there. So if there's one thing this podcast has taught you today, and Kate and I often preach this, is that shoot your shot, make those connections, work hard for yourself and prove your love for things, and good things will come out of it. And I think Gunther's the perfect example of that.
And I think, I mean, one of his best characteristics also is what he's told us. And he says, I can laugh at myself. And if you can dish it out, you have to be able to take it. And I think that that's just like such good life advice, and something that's just so easy to say, and sometimes for some people not very easy to do. Like a lot of people, I think, can dish it out, but then can't really take it, and maybe take themselves a little too seriously. And I love that Gunther doesn't take himself too seriously, and he can take it just as much as he can dish it. And he, you know, appreciates the memes and things that, you know, I mean, of course, as long as they're all in good fun. But I just think like he just has such a great energy and such a great outlook on life and success, and like what defines success and what defines, you know, working hard. And I just really think that everyone should be a little bit more like Gunther and have a little bit more of those outlooks.
I think, you know, obviously we always end our podcast with a bit of a manifest minute, and we say, in order to have this energy, move into the next week feeling this way. And I think everyone who's listened to this podcast, over the next week, channel your inner Gunther Steiner and really try and make your dreams a reality this week. Even if it's, you know, a super small step forward, nothing is too small in the process of making your dreams a reality. And if you're feeling down, you know, get back up again and get back on that horse and try again, because the answer is always no one until it's a yes. And so you just got to find the right people who believe in you. You got to find your Gene Haas.
You do. You have to find your Gene Haas. I think that's great. And
in a world,
like Gunther said, as long as you're just trying your best, that's all you can do. As long as you can go to bed at night and say, I did the best I could today. And sometimes your best isn't a lot. Sometimes, you know, just getting up and doing your day is the best you can do. I think your best is very relative and very subjective to what your mental state is, what your physical state is, what your, you know, life state is, your emotional state, all of that. And as long as you can go to bed and say, you know what, I did my best today.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
And you and I are always saying that.
I'm feeling just so inspired and motivated after this. I'm going to listen to this episode 100 times a day, I think. Like, this is my morning mantra, is I'm just going to listen to this episode.
You know how a couple weeks ago we said that Gunther could teach a masterclass on being broke and, like, you know, still running a company while not having enough money? He could also teach a masterclass on finding your inner peace, because I feel so inspired walking away from that conversation with Gunther today.
100%. I hope we get to do this again. Can't wait for his next book so we can talk to him about that one. What a fun day.
And this week's Manifest Minute is that we will be with Haas in Monza. So everyone, put that in your little brains. It's going to happen.
All right. Well, clearly our summer break didn't really work out for us in terms of taking a break, but I wouldn't have wanted to break our break any other way. Yeah. And so you guys, we might be back next week. Maybe we'll be back in Italy. Who knows? We'll be back at some point, but until then,
we'll see you on the internet.